Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, this is, I'm going to confess, this is one of my favorite subjects, talking about investing. But I'm not going to make this dry. We're going to make it interesting and relevant to you because the big question, of course, for everyone is, how do I invest? What do I do? When do I start? How do I start? What kinds of things should I be thinking about? How do I do it? What kind of process do I follow? All of the above. And I have lots of thoughts on those subjects, of course, for you. And I also like to bring in guests who can help me untangle, demystify that, and make it very relevant to you. And so we've done that. We found a real heavy hitter, and I know you're going to enjoy this program. So ready, here we go. Dr. Craig Israelson, PhD. He is a very well-regarded expert in the field. He teaches, he has written, he's done analysis, he's developed his own program called the 712 Portfolio, author of 3 books. I'll give them to you. 712, A Diversified Investment Portfolio with a Plan. Your Nest Egg Game Plan, How to Get Your Finances Back on Track to Create a Lifetime Income Stream in One Breath. And Thrifty Investor, Penny Wise Strategies for an Investor's on a Budget. And there he is. Craig, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David. Delighted to be here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm excited because I always enjoy hearing from an expert, somebody like yourself, PhD in Family Resource Management from Brigham Young University, and having been a writer. We came across Craig monthly articles in Financial Planning Magazine and contributing to Journal of Indexes and Horsemouth.com. And so we like to bring on somebody like Craig because he can give us some perspective. And so that's why he's here. The website, 712portfolio.com, the numeral 7, the word 12portfolio.com. So the big question, and I rattled them off there at the beginning of the introduction, Craig, is where do people start?
Well, part of that, that's a loaded question, as you know.
I know it is. I know it is.
they have to, a person needs to identify what they're saving for. So in other words, if you're saving for a down payment on a car, a down payment on a home, retirement, those are different objectives.
They all have different timetables.
Right. Yeah, the timetable really governs how a person structures their investment. And the typical pattern probably for a person who's not quite sure is they'll put money in a savings account. And that is not a bad idea. In fact, that's a wonderful idea. It's just that's not a complete approach if we're considering a long-term savings objective, say for retirement. For a down payment on a car, for a down payment on a home, that's a fairly short run time frame, like a couple of years, that's a perfectly adequate place to put some money. You need to keep it safe. You're just accumulating over the short run.
That's great. We're going to call that validation number one of Craig saying what David tells people is right. So that's validation number one, Craig. I tell people that all the time. I had a guy ask me the other day, hey, I'm going to invest. I want to buy a house in a couple of years. What do I do with my cash? Put it in the bank. Don't do anything because you can't. Well, I want to invest it. Well, no. If you're going to buy a house with it, you can.
Right.
So that timetable is everything.
Yeah, and people often use the wrong benchmark of performance as a comparison. In other words, they may look at the S&P 500, sort of the classic measure of the U.S. stock market, and they see what it's done. Then they look at the interest rate in their savings account, and they just sort of beat themselves up, thinking, oh, brother, what am I doing in cash, i.e. a savings account? Well, those are just two very different worlds. A stock investment, whether it's U.S. stock or non-U.S. stock, that requires a long time frame so you can weather the storm. Cash, I mean, a storm in a savings account is like right now, where we have basically a zero return. That's a storm. Well, that's a zero return. Okay, that's not exciting, but consider a storm in the U.S. stock market is minus 37%, minus 22%. Those are actual experiences people had in 2008, 2002, and that can wipe out. If you're saving for a down payment on a home, then you take a 37% loss, you've just wiped out several years of your accumulation.
Amen.
And that is not the right kind of risk to expose a short-term savings goal to.
Agreed.
So, that's the one thing we need to sort of remove the burden of guilt from ourselves if we're only getting you know, say a 1% return in a cash-like kind of product, if that product matches our goals and our needs, we don't even focus on the return. We're just focusing on the accumulated capital to reach that goal. And frankly, you know, a short-term goal, to reach that goal, 90% of that goal is going to be achieved by what we invest, not the growth of the investment. Whereas a retirement type of objective, oh, well, that's very different. Then you might have, it might be half and half. In other words, half of your objective will be achieved by the return that you get in the portfolio. Well, that's only true. That can only be true if you have 30 to 40 years, you know, in that kind of experience to let the growth, the return, that internal generating power, you know, produce half of your eventual objective. So that, you know, like you tell people, the time frame, the shorter the time frame, the less we would use any sort of stock invest as the performance comparison.
Well, here's a real world question for you, Craig, because I get this, is somebody says, well, you know, the truth is I'm behind. I really need to do a lot of catching up. I'm just not going to get there. I've got to be aggressive.
Well,
doggone, another loaded question.
Yeah, I hear that too.
Yeah.
And the problem is, I mean, that's true. The average 401k balance for 65-year-olds in the U.S. is about $70,000. And that's for 65-year-olds. So obviously, that's not enough money to fund the retirement. There's no portfolio design that can solve that problem. That's just a problem of undersaving. That's like getting a car, putting 10 gallons of gas in it, and then expecting to drive from San Francisco to Boston.
I mean, it's not anybody else's fault, is it?
Right.
They made that car just too fuel inefficient. Their fault. Yeah.
And so it can't happen. So we have to understand, as always, that, you know, a portfolio can do certain things and it can't do other things. And it can't take an insufficient amount of savings and turn it into a retirement income. So to that question, you know, they recognize they've undersaved. Well, so they have, in their mind, two options. One is they can expose the portfolio to quite a bit of risk in hopes of generating a higher account balance.
Sure.
But that's happening while they are retired.
Yes. Well, that
they're
kind of
get that higher return during their retirement years, and that's subjecting the portfolio to a lot of volatility, which is going to be very, very troubling to them in real day-to-day life. Volatility is very disturbing to people. So that, to me, is a poor choice.
Yeah, and that brought me to the other half of the kind of the mirror image of this, is if it's, you know, they're obviously taking on undue risk or excessive risk potentially to try to play quote unquote that catch up game by saying, hey, I've just got to be more aggressive because I'm behind, and trying to make up for what you described very, very well, Craig, that undersaving component. But when you flip it over and now they're into retirement, or they're getting very close to retirement, they really need to back off if they have had a heavy equity, you know, orientation, and set themselves up to not fall prey to what you just described, which is being in a position where these retirement assets that they're now going to depend on for income, that they not be in a position where, you know, the volatility of the market is, it's a yo-yo on their account, that they've gotten the accumulation you described and now they've got to hold on to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the key, is to hold on to what you've got, to admit to oneself that it's not enough, so be it. But the last thing you want to do is to lose anything you've accumulated, albeit it's still not enough. Well, but if you lose it to market volatility, now it's less than not enough. And, boy, I don't know how that's helpful. So for a lot of individuals, they're probably not going to be able to fully retire. There's probably going to be a lot of folks who are working in some sort of part-time employment during retirement. That's probably the only rational, feasible answer to that dilemma.
Well, part of the challenge, Craig, and I agree with everything you just said, is that they, and this is just, you know, we can blame it wherever we want to blame it, it's just the reality of our culture, is that we have been collectively told by them, whoever them are, that we work hard, we save hard, we invest, we are consistent, we follow the rules, we're not, you know, wasteful, and we'll get to the point where there'll be enough then that allows us to make this arbitrary, okay, at this age of 62 or 65, I am leaving the workforce never to look back, and everything, I have everything I need on my sailboat, and I'm pushing away from shore, never to work again. That is kind of this transition retirement myth that's been created, that for a lot of people that you've just kind of made a point of, not realistic.
No, and is it really what we want anyway? Do we want to suddenly disengage from a world, if our world of work, if our career had any meaning, do we just want to suddenly disengage from that type of meaning, that type of productivity, that type of involvement with others? You know, when you word it that way, the answer is usually, well, when you word it that way, no. So it's really a task of finding that next career, the retirement career.
Hmm.
Maybe it won't be as many hours. Maybe it'll be a different type of job. But the real dilemma, I think, is we have good health care,
mm-hmm.
and we have and good nutrition, and so we're living longer. And that may not sound like a dilemma, but in terms of, you know, when we're living, there's a meter running, and we have to put pennies in that meter. It costs to make footprints on this earth, and as we go from day to day. And that's all fine. I understand. You know, that's not a problem. We have 7 kids. We understand the cost, you know, of being a human on Earth. But this idea that we're going to work 30, 40 years and then save up enough money to then propel us without, quote, working for the
right.
next 30 or 40 years. You know, in the 1940s, the longevity for males was about 67, 68 years. That was typically when men died. Women have always lived a little bit longer. And so the idea of having a long retirement wasn't really in our collective psyche.
It's a very recent event.
Yeah, and so now men are living to mid-70s, late 70s, and so this idea, even into the early 80s, is pretty common for men as an average. And so we have serious issues of saving enough to fund longer and longer retirement. Well, we don't appear to be doing that. We don't, as a culture collectively, we're not saving. Because literally, you'd have to be saving 15 to 20% of your income.
Yeah, and that's hard for a lot of people to even get their mind around that.
Yeah.
Dr. Craig Erzerson, he is our guest today. His website, 712portfolio.com, numeral 7, word 12, portfolio, 712portfolio.com. And the book, 712, A Diversified Investment Portfolio with a Plan, imagine that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Have you considered an annuity as part of your retirement plan? Did you know that over the past 10 years, Americans put a staggering $2.3 trillion into annuities? Despite their popularity, many people are unsure about annuities. Why? Because annuities have been attacked for decades by financial folks who offer competing products or services. A lot of money is at stake. So you can imagine that financial firms who only offer investments don't want you to consider an annuity. Get the facts. Call Holland Financial to get your free copy of Annuities as Part of Your Retirement Plan. This booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities, as well as straightforward information about their costs, features, safety, and income potential. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back with Dr. Craig Erzerson, and we are talking about the realities of the strategies for investing and saving for retirement, or whatever it is that you're saving for to spend money on in the future. So, you know, that's what this is all about. The whole purpose of saving money and planning to have these things accumulate is to be able to, at some point in the future, take lump sums of money for whatever the event or the purchase is, to draw a stream of income and when you're done with it, leave it as a legacy. That's the big three. And so we have Craig on the line with us, and he's helping us kind of digest this investment work. And he validated point number two before the break for me, that I plan on working till I'm, well, I plan on working forever, Craig. I love my job, and I tell my clients, you know, they can count on me for me personally for at least another 25 years. And, you know, I will just shrink my work week. And if that means I end up eventually just coming in once a week to disrupt things, well, then that's what I'll do.
But disrupt.
But no, it's not work if you love it. And why quit doing what you love to do this artificial, I'm supposed to retire and go do something else thing, unless that's what you really want to do?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, people might have commitments they want to focus on with their church.
Sure.
With relief agencies. There is just so much talent in the retirement, in sort of the AARP community. That is a talent-rich environment to take all that accumulated life experience and then consider how can that be translated into areas of need. And you don't have to go to some other country. That Mm-mm. Often the needs are distressingly close to us.
The fields are white already. They're in front of us.
Yeah.
You don't have
to
look very far to see the need right in our own communities and to help. So yeah, there's plenty of ways to give others a benefit of our life experiences, and you don't have to go very far at all. So the idea here then, I think we've been getting at, Craig, and I really am pleased with your, you know, first, I'm really glad you agree with me with my thinking, but I love your approach, and I think it's straightforward that we've got to be realistic about retirement. Going back to the being realistic about investing too, because, you know, you've got to know that these things have to be done, and I'd love for you to echo one of the things that one of the things that I talk often about with people that they don't quite get, and we kind of started to touch on it, and we could spend a few minutes if you would. This idea that when you get out to the point where you want to start either it's to draw on for retirement or even to supplement maybe that part-time or shift in your vocation to something else, to start drawing on what you have accumulated, we need to make that shift to maybe be a little more conservative, because if we don't, then we stand the risk of, and it goes by a lot of different names, but we stand the risk of having to sell investments when they're down in value if the market doesn't cooperate, which it often does not, or what I call dollar cost ravaging, which is taking money out while the market's down, and that can ravage your portfolio. It's the opposite of dollar cost averaging. So speak to that a little bit, because I think a lot of people just don't quite get the risk that can pose to their portfolios and the lifestyle that they hope they're going to be able to achieve in retirement.
Yeah, dollar cost ravaging, that's a very graphic, helpful term, and extremely accurate, because the timing of the returns when a portfolio has a variety of returns, most of them positive, some negative, over the course of 20, 30 years. As we're accumulating money during our working career, the timing of those returns doesn't really matter that much. But when we're taking money out of a portfolio, the timing of those returns matters a great deal. And we're much more sensitive, of course, to negative returns when we're, quote, dollar ravaging a portfolio, meaning we're pulling money out just to live on. Well, that's a shock to a portfolio. We don't want to multiply the shock or any shock by having a negative return as well in the portfolio.
Mm.
And so one of the core philosophical foundations of investing is diversification. That diversification is essentially, in the most blunt sense, it's an open admission to everyone that we ever interact with that we don't know which asset class is going to outperform over the next 12 months or 60 months or 120 months. That's why we diversify. Now, if we do know which asset class is going to do best, of course, we would never diversify.
Sure.
We would only invest in that asset class. Hopefully, people listening to this show are they've had enough experience in this to know that we don't know.
Well, for those
that know what we don't know.
Yeah, and for those that haven't, Craig, we'll give them a very vivid example, and I'm sure you recall this as well as I do, that at the end of the 1990s, going into 2000, TV television personalities, would-be pundits were declaring that, you know, it's different this time and it's this new world. And why would you bother? And I'll never forget this, quote unquote, why would you bother with anything like asset allocation? Just put all your money into technology stocks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's, and in fact, I did a study on that very topic. I looked at the number of technology mutual funds that came to market, and most of them came to market in late 99, just in time to get
clobbered.
Totally eviscerated in 2001 and 02. And so when an asset class, in this case technology, which is really a sub-asset class, when that starts to get really hot and everybody thinks it's impenetrable, that's probably the time to be moving in a different direction. But, of course, that starts to sound like market timing, which I'm not really a fan of.
Well, so I don't think there's anything wrong, though, with trimming and maintain. I think that, another way of saying it is just to maintain.
Yeah, I mean,
maintain your diversification.
Yeah, and in fact, that's really one of the core tenets of diversification, is that we have to decide how many asset classes we'd like to have exposure to. Think of it as making salsa. So as you're making salsa, how many ingredients would you like? Well, you want enough to really achieve what salsa is all about. And that's probably 6, 7, 8 ingredients. So with that kind of as a metaphor, a portfolio should have 8, 9, 10. In my little world, it's 12.
Mm-hmm.
I think 12 ingredients does a pretty good job diversifying across a number of different types of asset classes, as I call them. So in my little 7-12 model, you've got U.S. stock, non-U.S. stock. These would be mutual funds.
Sure.
Real estate, what I call resources, which would be natural resources and commodities, U.S. bonds, non-U.S. bonds, and cash. And those are the core ingredients. And then you really start to split those out, those 7 broad asset classes, and you implement that philosophy with 12 actual funds. And they could be mutual funds or ETFs. And that's the 7-12 model, 7 representing 7 core asset classes, 12 representing the number of actual funds to implement that broad diversification. And then, as you have implied, there needs to be some trimming that goes on. And that's exactly what rebalancing does, is that as we rebalance all 12 each year at the end of the year, that trims some money off of the best performers and puts it into the underperformers. And that may sound kind of bass-ackwards to people, but that is really selling high, buying low.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know what? And I have to, before we get too far away from your salsa analogy, I love that, Craig, and here's why. And it's true for a portfolio. If you only use, when you make salsa, tomatoes, onions, and jalapeno, okay, you only got those 3 ingredients, it's not going to work. It's going to burn. It's going to be too hot. It's going to burn you up. And so you need that greater, because that's exactly what happens if you load up all on one, you know, just say technology and a couple of other categories. It's just going to be too much, and that's why you need to get it. And, you know, my dad makes a great salsa, and I watch him make it, and he'll do it, and then he'll check it. And that's the same thing, because then he'll realize, well, you know what, I got a little too much jalapeno. I'm going to have to rebalance my salsa. And that's exactly what you're talking about. And that makes sense to people when you explain it to them that way.
Well, I think most of us learn in metaphors. You know, when a person is trying to learn something new, and then they finally get a glimpse of it, and they say, that's like da-da-da-da-da. They compare it to something they know. And once they can relate this new phenomena to something they've already had experience with, then it all kind of makes sense in a big picture. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been teaching at the college level for 25-plus years. And I've learned that if I can think of examples or little metaphors or comparisons, it really helps my students get a general picture of what we're talking about. And once they have some confidence that they understand what this is and they can get their arms around it, then they can move forward and begin to act on it and start putting things together and actually becoming investors and actually rebalancing. And it's made more simple when we think of it in simpler terms, such as making salsa.
I like making salsa. It's good stuff, and it's good for portfolios. And I tell you what, I want to come back to one more thing before we let you go, Craig, and get your thoughts on it. And it's back to the loading up on any one thing, you know. And we could, of course, tell the an easy example of Enron and how Enron, what happened there, and people having everything invested in Enron. The employees got totally blindsided, and they had everything they had in it, including their careers and 401ks and, you know, all of that. The challenge that people have, and it's the emotional aspect, of course, is they get sucked into an investment, and it's really hard when it's going up. And I'm looking at one of these right now for somebody who's got a company he used to work for, and he's got some money outside of that company, but he's got the lion's share of his retirement assets, and he's ready to retire in mm-hmm. that company. And he's just like, you know, I know what's going on. It's going up. It's, you know, they're this, they're that, they're all that. And it's even a more pronounced challenge of trying to apply diversification when they have to let go of that.
Yeah, that's tough, particularly if the stock has done well, you know, if whatever the person's investment has done well, to think about diluting that with mm-hmm. other types of investments is kind of a painful thought. And that's where we have to measure one of the two compasses that most humans tend to respond to is fear and greed.
Yeah.
Which one is driving us?
I think we have an answer.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's greed, then we're going to have to diversify. If it's fear, we're going to have to act.
Yeah. Ooh,
and
good.
I guess, you know, that notion of being really heavily invested in one thing is kind of like having just putting all of our efforts and energies into one best friend in junior high school.
Yeah.
Wow. Hopefully we can all remember back that junior high school is sort of a social war zone in terms of just the on-again, off-again kinds of behavior of children of that age. One day they like you, the next day they don't like you, and just that sort of merry-go-round emotional experience. It's a lot better to have, you know, to try to make friends with as many people as you can, because in that age group, that tough age for kids, that, you know, pinning all of your hopes on one best friend is just really risky. And the other aspect of that is, while that person may be a wonderful person, there are a lot of wonderful people that we should be friends with. And that's how I feel about asset classes. There are a lot of really good asset classes that we should have in our portfolio. And we shouldn't stop diversifying when we retire. In other words, if diversification is a valid principle during our working career, as we're building up that retirement nest egg, well, diversification is still a valid principle after we retire.
Amen.
And so this idea that's been bandied about for decades, that our allocation to bonds should be equal to our age, is, in my opinion, just a really bad idea.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know what, Craig? We'll have to have you back and dig more into that part, because that's a whole other excellent subject to cover. Craig Israelson's been our guest. Ladies and gentlemen, the 712 Portfolio Strategy talks about. The website is 712portfolio.com. Craig, thanks for being with us, and we'll definitely have you back.
Thank you so much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.